Is it going? It's not flashing. It was flashing before, and I thought, does that mean record?
Let's see. I think it is. Okay, let me try it again. So now it's standby.
Okay.
All right, we're going to demonstrate how to do a spiritual care conversation based on my journal assignment, and Ryan has prepared questions. So we're going to just act as though this is the real thing.
Okay. So, hi, Carrie. First, I want to say just this is now the second time I've worked with this material of yours, and just as the first time around, I'm just very moved by your transparency in this, your courage in doing this. I admire it. It's a rare treat, I think, for students to have like an intimate look into their professor's life like this. And so I want to put it out there that I'm truly touched by it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So the first thing I wanted to ask was how you prepared yourself emotionally and spiritually for this conversation today.
Mm-hmm. I think the main preparation was to do the journal assignment again. So I've done this assignment about 5 times.
Okay.
And whenever I do it, I try to use the ways I'm thinking about pastoral care and counseling.
Yeah.
So I think sitting down and doing this sort of very intensive self-reflection was the main way I prepared. And then this morning I debated whether to read through the assignment again, even though I know it, of course, very
it's
well.
It's your life.
Yes. So I decided to instead do a usual spiritual practice of listening to some choral music and working on a chapter. So it was sort of that creativity, time, and energy.
Yeah.
I do tend to over-prepare, and I think it makes me less spontaneous. So I thought I would come into this fresh.
So instead of over-preparing, you just regular prepared?
Yeah, my usual spiritual practices. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, at the end, we could reflect on that and see if it, changed anything.
That's a good idea.
But hearing you say over prepared makes me wonder how do you gauge what is over preparing versus either under preparing or what is over all about?
Well, I think it's. I don't know whether other people have this experience, but when you use your own stories for learning and teaching and sharing with others, I have a hard time. I guess it's because I'm an introvert. I feel it very intensely when I'm doing the written work and the private introspection. But when I talk about these experiences with others, I don't access the full range of feelings associated with them.
Okay.
And so I think over-preparing is a way to cope with the anxiety about, will this be emotional? Sure. If I really think through every little thing, I won't be surprised by whatever feelings I have.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, but I do think... using experiences like this in a professional and academic sense, I think it does help. It does make it a little less stressful if you have processed a lot of the feelings ahead of time. But it's also okay in this context for things to happen spontaneously.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, so that kind of leads up to my next question, which is because you have presented this and talked about it, written about it, this particular traumatic experience when you were 12 so many times. What has changed for you over time? How has your own response to the incident changed now that you've got a few decades of reflection on it?
But this time around, I think what really struck me was paying much closer attention to the feelings. Especially the feelings of fear and anxiety.
That you felt back then.
Yes. Okay. And that really shape a certain way of being oriented to the world.
Right.
You know, that's last week I was driving to Yale to give a lecture, and I was driving a friend's car, a very fancy car. Mm. And I was totally in this theology of fear.
Huh.
And I was convinced people were going to hit
me. Yeah.
But wow. God wouldn't protect me.
Interesting.
And I kept trying to do deep breathing. I wasn't able to listen to music because the car was so fancy. I couldn't,
you couldn't figure out how to make that bells work. And whistles. Yeah.
And I was just aware of just the physiology of fear. You know, I'm sure my blood pressure was high. And at the same time, I was aware of another a value that was shaped out of this reflections I had this time around, I became aware of, which is the value of adventure.
Hmm.
So this time when I wrote it and I really identified the fears and the values, I had a lot more self-compassion around the value of adventure.
Okay.
And the way I was a kind of very self-reliant kid who kind of knew what was good for me. Like this attack happened on my way home from this best friend that I had discovered that year. So we had sort of realized we had things in common. Mm-hmm. We were both very shy and introspective, my friend Madeline. And we realized we had this sense of humor and we loved doing very particular kinds of play. And we had all these private jokes around our classmates. And so very intense bonding. And I adored her mother.
And she was the mother who might have been a resource if you could go back and do it again. Yeah.
So that was the reason I was coming home. I went to their house almost every day after school. And this was a very safe suburb. So it was one of those really kind of random acts of violence.
Right.
But afterwards, I continued to maintain this friendship. So, and I continued as a teenager to travel on my own. And so this week when I was doing this lecture in Yale and feeling the fear and realizing how familiar that fear-oriented world is.
Right.
But then that what helped me in doing the assignment this time was realizing how adventure plays into all that.
Okay.
You know, the adventure of going to Yale for the first time and lecturing there. Yeah.
And maybe realizing that there was an adventure to walking home by yourself.
Yeah.
And having this relationship with this friend that was very much yours and not anyone else's.
Right. You know? And that was a lifeline for me, that friendship and my relationship with that family. And then I think about, you know, and I'm driving to Yale, I think, why do I do these things? Why do I put myself into so much stress? I didn't have to sign up to do this. But it's that sense of adventure and always pushing things.
Sure.
And then realizing the world is good.
Yeah.
You know, when I finally got the car back in my friend's driveway and nothing terrible had happened.
So you went from this car, almost, the way I'm thinking of this is that the car was like an extension of your body.
True.
And after the incident when you were 12, your body had this heightened, you know, you were hyper vigilant.
Yes.
You were sensitive and, you know, everything could be this source of attack.
Yes.
And that's like what the car became for you.
And this moral theology, which is so real in those moments, that when you venture out, maybe as a girl even, when you venture out and really take a risk, like
yeah.
maybe if I wasn't a woman driving this fancy
BMW sports car, I would have thought, wow, what a great opportunity. Let's step on the gas.
Sure.
But I was totally freaked, you know.
But yet you were able to tap into adventure at
I
some
did,
point.
I did, yeah.
Was that while you were still driving or afterwards?
A bit of both. And humor. Like I used it as an illustration in the lecture I gave.
So these scripts or maybe embedded theologies.
They're very real in the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I was convinced I was going to have somebody was going to bump into me, somebody was going to ding the door. Mm. It was very vivid, you know. Even though I knew rationally, you know.
That it was no different from driving any other time.
True enough.
Yeah. So these things come back and rear their ugly heads even after you know, years of reflection.
And they're very emotionally based. And I could feel the fear was so physiological.
Right.
And then it's like it's the glasses through which you're looking at the world, and
it must be relieving to know that that's gone. Like you were able to talk yourself through that fear.
I was able to talk myself through it. Yeah.
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 Oh, well, I know. I used to be a valet. I used to valet park. So I know the feeling of like being in a car where you don't want anything. You don't want a speck of dust on it.
And,
so I wanted to know more about how your ideas about God have evolved. Mm-hmm. And so you said that around the age of 12, right after that experience, you really didn't do too much conscious thinking about God, but any ideas that you did have about God were of this like judging, aloof. Mm-hmm. It was like the nun who was the principal of your school just kind of blown up into this God, God form.
Yeah.
So, could you talk about how you see God today, and how that those ideas evolved over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the biggest change for me has been realizing how music is a very kind of primitive spiritual care experience for me.
Okay.
And the experience of beauty. You know, when I was driving the car, the only thing that really helped was I had been listening for the past week or so to this absolutely gorgeous choral setting of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Mm-hmm. You posted it for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I started singing that to myself, and it tapped into all sorts of feelings. I'm expecting my first grandchild in a couple of months. And I was saying to my son, we were trying to talk about memories of when he was a child. And I was said something about singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. He says, oh, I remember that. Or I think he might remember me singing it to his younger brother.
Okay.
And so that music seems to have this capacity for me of almost like a medication. Like I feel my brain shifts out of fear into compassion.
Yeah.
And And coming to that realization, which I think I've known that for a long time, but then I experienced that quite vividly a couple of months ago on a retreat, and it made me realize what a powerful experience that is for me. And it's a very intangible experience of a sense of order and beauty. I've never had a religious faith that was really focus personally on God or Jesus. I think maybe because of that skepticism I wrote about.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Which has been very ingrained in me. And then I think my love of literature and my sort of postmodern approach. I mean, I think that my religious community works for me because it's a symbol system that is very, very rich and can be experienced sensorily. But to be honest, I'm very skeptical about, you know, the absolute truth of that symbol system.
Right. Huh.
So I think music is a way that, if I were to say, you know, it's sort of God on my brain, but I don't even think about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If if hard pressed, maybe you would say music. I don't know if it's like music is your God or yeah. some sort of manifestation of, yeah. of God. But
it's a kind of an access to a different spiritual orienting system yeah, that's life-giving.
So in some ways, your ideas about God are definitely less rigid.
Yeah, true.
they're more abstract, but in a way also more pointed. They're very connected to these symbols that are mm-hmm. not just images, but sounds and
yeah.
full sensory experiences.
Yes.
Okay. And that really seems to work well for you.
It does.
And tap into it often.
I mean, I think it works most vividly when I'm actually participating in worship. And now that I'm singing in the choir, I really experience it.
Yeah.
When I'm on my own, like that was the trouble in the car with, and not being able to actually immerse myself in music.
Right.
I could get it to work for a couple of minutes, but then I'd be back in the fear mode, you know,
right.
white knuckles yeah. on the steering wheel.
Oh, boy. So what other beliefs have changed, core beliefs have changed as a result of your traumatic experience when you were little?
Hmm.
I don't know if you want to answer that, like what changed immediately
or over time.
Over time.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I think as people will realize in doing this kind of writing, it's continually evolving. Like I'm finding anticipating having a grandchild is bringing up a lot of issues for me about, because it was, and this is the son, my older son who was like 5 months old when I went on this retreat and the whole experience of the assault came up.
Yeah.
Because of being now a mother myself.
Sure.
And so I'm finding that anticipating being a grandmother has brought a lot of memories around the struggles of being a mother. And also some hope, because my mother was in many ways a very, well, there was a lot of emotional neglect in my family because my mother, because of her upbringing, and I think almost her, the way she's wired, had a very hard time expressing a lot of affection for us as children.
Mm-hmm.
But then she was very affectionate as a grandmother, and both of my boys had very positive memories of her.
So she evolved.
Kind of redeemed herself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm finding this experience is bringing up a lot of memories around what kind of mother I was. And I do tend to have this kind of harsh moral theology I use to judge myself.
Yeah.
That's sort of my first way of, you know, understanding the past. And then realizing that this could be an opportunity to re-experience the past in a new way. Now, that doesn't have to do with the assault in particular, but the assault was so much shaped by family dynamics and cultural dynamics.
Right.
And that's kind of hopeful for me, too, because I think, you know, I have these fears that my son and his wife are going to have the same struggles I had as a parent. And it seems so vivid to me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of when you have a traumatic experience in childhood, then fear takes on this absolute quality that it's real.
Yeah.
And then you have to be hypervigilant
right.
and think of every possible thing that could happen to protect those who are vulnerable. And I do have that kind of fear orientation to being a grandmother.
Hmm. Wow. So...
So it's
it seems like fear, it runs the risk of fear engulfing you.
For sure.
And you have to really be on the ball for it not to.
It's so, I mean, I think doing this reading on the revised expanded edition, and one thing that really struck me was both fear and shame are very physiologically complex emotions.
Truly. Yeah.
And they do generate this orienting system, this way of experiencing the world that seems so real in the moment, especially when it's linked to your religious outlook at the time.
Right. Mm. Yeah. I'm thinking of people who get overtaken by paranoia.
Yes.
And it's
very similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be exhausting and pretty awful.
I know, and it's hard to realize, because the fear is a way of coping with danger.
Yeah.
And protecting those who are vulnerable. It's hard to realize that it's not the way things mm-hmm. really are, you know.
And yet fear is also, it does have protective
True.
Value. I mean,
yeah.
it's like you don't want to like live a life completely free of fear
Right.
because fear is protective.
Yes.
And so you have to strike this balance.
Right. Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Let's go back to the retreat.
Yeah.
The retreat that mm-hmm. You were a brand new mother.
Right.
And even though you were eventually ordained Presbyterian, mm-hmm. it was going back to the denomination of your youth.
Yes.
I find that really notable that
yeah.
you know, you mm. went back to a Catholic setting. You were in this Jesuit retreat.
Right.
And again, a 4 or 5 month old at home. And,
yeah.
and that's where you were able to, I think of it as like you had this inertia with the trauma that had happened in your life, and finally you were able to like push that, mm-hmm. make these experiences, these memories, all of it, give it movement.
Yes.
Yeah. And that priest showed mm-hmm. you compassion, and you wrote mm-hmm. that he created a safe place for you.
Yes.
So I just wanted to hear more about that. You know, mm-hmm. tell me mm-hmm. whatever, maybe it's you want to talk about the priest himself mm-hmm. or how he created a safe place or the
yeah.
general retreat or mm-hmm. kind of the context in your life. Just
yeah.
tell us more.
Well, it was the experience of Vatican II theology.
Yeah.
Because I grew up
Pre-Vatican
yeah. II. So that was really my formative theology. And I was really drawn, I think that retreat was the first time I realized that I was really drawn to contemporary Catholic
mm-hmm.
art and ritual. And it could have been, although I didn't identify at the time, an experience of sort of the mothering side of God, mm. maybe, although it was, you know, Jesuit, they were all men.
they were in touch with their mothering
yeah,
sides.
Yeah. It was a very, it was a beautiful setting. You had this wonderful sense of being taken care of.
Mm. Where was it?
It was in Guelph, Ontario, like just 5 miles from my home.
Oh, wow.
And my spiritual director there, I had started participating in a group of clergy who met there every 3 weeks to
okay.
share their experiences. And that was very positive. And he was part of that group. And some of those clergy had done these kind of retreats. It's sort of, it's an odd experience looking back, because I don't think I did those kind of things before then.
Yeah. And yet there it was, right?
Yeah.
5 miles from your house.
Right. Yeah.
It didn't require, you know, traveling
yeah.
huge distances.
Right.
But yet you somehow traveled a huge distance in
That's
your
true.
In your mind or your heart.
yeah.
I
think the feminist movement was part of the whole thing,
too. It sounds
too.
Like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
A very different social, sociocultural setting from
mm-hmm.
when you were 12.
Yeah.
That maybe gave you a voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the complicated experience. I mean,
did the priest do anything in particular?
He was just very kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. And speaking of coping, of things that helped you cope,
mm-hmm.
more immediate
yeah.
To that experience. Well, I guess I should say when you were 15, so 3
yes.
years after your experience. You'd find yourself sitting in the masses,
yes.
the midday masses at
yeah.
your high school,
mm-hmm.
and you know, take me back to that. I want to picture it in my head and talk about why it was so regenerative
yeah.
for you.
I think it was partly maybe simply being an introvert and went to this huge high school. It was a Catholic high school. So I'd often at lunch, I had a little circle of women friends. My best friend still was my best friend. But me and my siblings had talked about how difficult that high school was. Mm. Just a huge place and, you know. And
scary nuns.
The way, no, not oh, too much.
Okay.
So I'd often either go to the library, because I used to read like crazy, and spend lunch in the library, or sometimes I'd go to Mass.
Yeah.
And I think it was a very contemporary chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Very quiet and simple liturgy and kind of what I experienced later at the retreat center.
Mm.
And there was still in me at that time, I didn't really leave the Catholic Church until I went to college. So I wasn't at that point tapping into a lot of the anger I later felt about the patriarchy of the church. Right. But I did have such a strong sense of religious duty.
Mm.
As a kind of neurotic kid.
But I don't get the sense that you were going to those masses because you were dutiful. Like they,
that's true.
They really did.
Yeah.
You got something out of it that
yeah.
that helped you maybe center yourself, or I'm not
sure
that's
the
right language.
I think it was kind of, yeah, a little oasis in my high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear these themes of solitude and silence.
Yeah.
Yet, sometimes it's the silence that helps give you like a sense of peace, and then sometimes it's music. It's
yeah.
a burst of
yes.
of noise and sound, and
yeah.
But it, like auditory information
that
seems
true.
To have a big impact on you.
That's very true.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there were the last questions I really wanted to ask were just processing questions about.
Yeah.
About this, I don't know if it's too soon to
no,
shift
that's
to
fine.
To process, but you know, again, knowing that you've worked with this material quite a bit
yeah.
over your life, you know, how has it been today talking about it right now?
Okay,
how are you doing with it?
Good.
Yeah. How was this?
It was very caring and compassionate. You have a very nice style.
Oh.
I'm talking about it.
Good. I appreciate that.
And knowing the kind of work you do, I'm sure you could hear anything.
I have to my problem is not as you've talked about in your post, trying to separate the therapist from more of an intercultural spiritual care
yes.
giver.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to delve into the psychological parts
sure.
of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have to work quite hard to I don't know, stop myself from doing that
yes.
and keep it focused in a different way. And maybe that could be the you know, we could talk about this in one of our discussion
yes,
boards or something
yes.
like that. But, you know, is there anything else that you want to say about reflecting on this, or just about the, you know, your life as it is today versus how it was back then?
Well, I think it's been what's been helpful in this particular conversation is to have a space to process a recent vivid experience
yeah.
of the fear
sure.
orientation to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was very, and then that sense of adventure too, that, you know, I need to acknowledge more. And then also this whole stuff about becoming a grandmother and
yeah.
how when we take on a new role like that, we cycle back and re-experience things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also have the opportunity, if we're doing this kind of self-reflexive work, to put it together in a new way.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special when you do this sort of ongoing reflection and then have a chance to talk it through from one moment to the next.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so very much for sharing, as always.
Oh.
And I hope our students are able to you know, use this as a good template for their own practices.
Yeah.
So
good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.